Chapter 16. Through the Arnsberg. We hurried back to my shack by way of the forest, first backing away from the town square before darting into the trees like fleeing deer. Risa kept one meaty fist bound up in my shirt, and I think I must have been driving so hard that he ripped a hole halfway down my back by the time I could see Ambrosius's pen in the distance. The knots in my gut eased up a bit when I saw my place peek at me through the trees, but then they torqued back down again when I realized I wouldn't be seeing it again for quite a while. We had to get out of there. It was only a matter of time, as I figured, before someone back in town, either ours or theirs, got the idea that maybe they could skip the trip to Colmar if they gave up something more desirable than their farmer's skills. I thought about the things that Risa had done yesterday out in plain view of everyone, and knew he was easily worth any 20 normal men. There was something terrible about a man so naturally powerful that you could do everything in your power to kill the shit out of him, and he might not even notice. Yes, only a matter of time. I prodded Risa over by a tree, pointed at the gnarled system of roots that twisted through the dirt like old knuckles, and told him to stay there. Then, when I started to walk away, the big oaf followed me, and I had to prod him back over by the tree, press him down to his knees, and spend the next however long it was waving my hands in his face like an asshole until he finally seemed to get it. I went through the whole routine a few more times to make sure, and then when I was sure, I backed away from him slowly, as if I were robbing him. He crouched by the tree, watching me leave with huge, solemn eyes. He didn't so much as budge, so I smiled and nodded at him. Then he smiled back at me and made to get up and follow, and I had to go the fuck back over there and pretend to be mad at him. When he seemed to understand that time, I just put my back to him and went. I decided if he still followed, there was nothing I could do to stop him. I hurried back to my house, peered around the corner to look back down the road towards town, and waited a while. It seemed as though no one was coming my way, so I ducked inside. There wasn't much to collect in there, but I knew we would need as much as we could get from the little I had. I grabbed the shiv from my bed and stuffed it under the rope holding my breeches up. Then I grabbed an old moth-eaten gunny sack from the corner and went around the room stuffing anything I could find into it. I didn't even pay attention to what I was grabbing. I just made a few tight circles around the place and swept anything that wasn't larger than my hand into the sack. I wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible, and decided I could take inventory later when we were safely around the bend again. It took a lot less time than I would have hoped to collect everything from my home. I started thinking about other towns we might go to, taking my marks from yesterday right along with us. We wanted to go to a larger town, I thought, and so we should start heading south. The only other directions we really had were east or west into the high country, and any of the towns we found there would be as minor as my own. We needed a place a little larger than my piddling town, a place with many shops and back alleys into which I could get lost. I needed large places with many dark corners in which to hide. Plotsdorf was the closest, but we couldn't go there. The road led directly from our village straight through the heart of Plotsdorf. If we went there, the chance was high that we'd run into that son of a bitching captain and his detachment. I decided it was a problem for later. Right now, we had to get set for travel. Real travel. This would not be as easy as hitching a cart to a donkey and heading a few miles north. We would be traveling for real now, with no true inkling of our destination. We had to get somewhere new, somewhere far from there. Maybe even another small village, despite my misgivings, just to get started. I was going to need some new clothes. Something more than the tattered rags on my body. Something more robust than the makeshift rawhide I bound up around my feet with thongs. Yander's farm was close to my house, far away and out of sight of our little village. When I got there, I saw there was clothing out on the dry line, as there usually was of a morning. And as I yanked items indiscriminately from the line and stuffed them into my sack, I saw a pair of old muddy boots left out by the front door. These things looked pretty damned good, better at least than any of the things I had. So along with me they came. I gave a formal bow to the mayor on the way out and explained we had to go away a while, that her love was now a wanted donkey who must live by the hoof for a little while until things calmed down, maybe until Dittmar's fucking war was finished. I could not tell if she understood what I told her, but I looked at her belly and thought maybe Yander was right. Maybe the old girl was growing a mule. The thought made me happy. I don't know why, but back then it made me happy. Now, today, I suspect it's the only thing that keeps me from crying when I think about my old donkey, my old friend. I miss him sometimes hard enough I can't move. Sometimes I'll wake up in my berth and forget all that has happened, and I'll think for a while that it's my old pallet I'm laying on. I'll think I'm back in my old shack, or sometimes maybe I think I'm on the road again with Risa, laid up under a tree somewhere with Sunna's light parting my eyes. Though I know that's no real sun back in Erda, suspended out over the sea. I've seen real suns since then, and I know now that the throne is little more than a child's stool. But when I wake, I forget for a while that I know these things. I'll lay there, coming slowly back, and pretty soon I realize my bed is soft and that my blankets are made of a material so complex I still don't understand what I'm wrapping myself up in at the end of my day, only that it's as thin as lace and that sometimes it can feel either hot or cool, and it always seems to feel the perfect temperature. I remember that I can make light by saying the word, that I haven't had to make a real fire for years now. And right after that, I'll remember that he's gone, and then the day might as well not even have occurred. Not for me, at least. I'll just lay there until it's time to sleep again, and hopefully, on the next morning, I'll have better luck. On those days, Herpetia sees to things for me. Sometimes I think if she hadn't come with us, I wouldn't be here. I keep these things to myself, though. I think she doesn't like to hear me talk about it. I don't know how long I was at it. Maybe 20 minutes. It felt like forever. It was a real bitch standing out in the open like that, robbing my neighbor out in the open during the day. I kept waiting to hear someone shout at me, to hear a horn blow, to hear the pound of hoofbeats as the captain leaned into the saddle to trample me down. But none of these things happened. The morning was peaceful here. So much so, you'd never guess that a mile away, there were people being press-ganged into the service of the crown. Later, I found the tree whereby I'd left the giant. He was there. As I approached, I saw he'd essentially not moved since I'd left. Not so much as to scratch his ass, so far as I could tell. I came closer and saw that his eyes were still very wide, but now they were also very red, wet, and swollen. He'd been crying. I leaned over to let the sack drop from my shoulder and dumped the boots. He kept looking at me like that, and it disturbed me about as much as I'd ever been disturbed. Risa? Hey, are you?
No. Go.
He stretched a hand out to me, slowly. I took it, entranced, as though I moved my hand toward a fire to see how long I could withstand the pain of burning. His hand locked around my wrist, pulled me in, and then it was bound up in my shirt again, yanking jagged tears into the front. I looked down and saw one or two exposed ribs peeking around the edges of his fist and said, "Well, I guess I'm glad it was a laundry day over at the farm." I looked at his eyes again and winced. "You thought I left you, didn't you? For good."
"No go, Udo."
"No, I didn't leave you, Risa. I had to go get these things." I gestured at the sack and began to ramble. "We're going to need more things. A lot more things. We're going to need a lot of food with the way you eat. That's to start. I just had to get some supplies, can't you see? And then I suppose I'd better find some way to clothe you, but honestly, Risa, I don't know how in hell's name I'm going to do it. I don't think any three pairs of britches would cover that ass of yours."
"No go. No go."
"I'm not. Look, I'm right here." He shook his head.
"No go, Udo. No go."
He repeated that a while, and because he only whispered it, I didn't stop him. It seemed to make him feel better, repeating those words like that, as if he was convincing himself instead of me. I sure didn't like how it sounded, though. I didn't like the look in his eyes when he looked at me. I wanted to yell at him then, and tell him to quit looking at me like that. Tell him I wasn't his goddamned keeper. Then the feeling passed, and we were still there together by the tree. His hand was still wound up in my shirt, and he kept saying, "No go." I opened the sack, examined the contents a moment, and decided it still wasn't time to see what I'd gotten. It was bitter to understand that. I didn't want to leave the area until I knew we had all we would need, but we really had to get the fuck out of there. Every moment we tarried was a moment in favor of being discovered. I led him deeper into the trees, now in search of Ambrosius. I thought about things as he followed me. There were some real problems in our immediate future, the way I figured it. I thought I had a pretty good idea about how we were going to make our way in the world, but it required putting Risa out where people could see him. The rumors would travel quickly once we started. Maybe they were already traveling now, in fact. Maybe they'd started telling the captain about Risa back in town. Maybe he was breaking off a posse from his soldiers to stay in the village and search for us. A giant like him would be quite valuable in an army. I wasn't sure how to be about it. Our land, Teodiscus, the entire northern continent of Erda, in other words, was all under Dithmar's rule. There wasn't anywhere we could go to escape his reach, not unless we rode across the Mittlera, and then we would just be in the south. Dithmar was going that direction anyway with his fucking navy if he hadn't already. A problem for another day, I decided. Right then, I just had to find my donkey and get around the bend. And find him we did. The twat rolled his eyes and smiled at us as we approached, and then when he struggled up from the ground, he farted mightily. "You've just been napping this whole time, haven't you?" Ambrosius said everything to you with his eyes, and it was very hard to be annoyed with him for long. I hunkered down to my knees and went through the sack. The thing was large, nothing like a purse. It hung past my hips when I slung it over my shoulder. It still wasn't time to take inventory. That was for later. I dug through it until I found the empty water skin. Then I took it over to the stream, which was fast moving and safe enough, filled it, and brought it back over to Ambrosius. Risa kept by my side the entire time, hand bound up in my shirt. "You'll have to release me at some point, you know." I was tying the water skin and the sack over Ambrosius's back with a hank of rope. The old donkey gave me a long look that said he wasn't happy about the situation, but understood why it had to be. I scratched him gently along the swell of his jaw, which seemed to lessen the sting. Meanwhile, Risa had not let me go. "Can I at least change my shirt? This one is so moldy and caked in mud that it's about ready to disintegrate." He just stared at me. I pulled my new shirt from the sack and held it up. "See? I want to put this on. Can't you let me?" He still stared. His hand seemed to loosen at first, but then I discovered he had only loosened it to take a firmer grip. "Damn it, Risa. This isn't gonna work."
"No go."
"Yes, I fucking know that. Just hang on a minute." I stuck my shiv in the dirt, untied and removed the rawhide from my feet, dropped my pants, and stepped out of them. Standing there in the forest, held prisoner by a damned ox, as naked from the waist down as the day my mother shat me out. I rummaged in the sack on Ambrosius's back a moment until I found the breeches. As I did this, I happened to glance at Risa and stopped. He now wore a stupid grin. He looked down at my cock, grinning, and then he gestured at it. "Grow the fuck up," I grumbled. "We can't all be descended from Sleipnir." I pulled the breeches up. They were far too long for my legs, so I rolled the waist over several times and bound the whole mess up with the rope belt. Then I put the shiv back under the belt and pulled out the clean shirt, held it up and asked, "Well, how about it?"
"No go."
"For the love of fucking Frigg, Risa."
"No go, Udo."
"Fine. Just keep holding on then, you magnificent idiot." I put my head through the neck hole, grasped the tatters of the other shirt beneath it with both hands, and yanked. The old shirt seemed to sigh rather than tear, as if it fell to dust. I heard Risa gasp, but then I was shoving arms through sleeves and jerking down the hem before he could get his hand wrapped up in the new cloth, as I knew he would. This isn't going to work, you know. I shook my head as I said this, and he shook his back at me. I glanced at Ambrosius and said, "A little help?" He smiled at me in a way that said, "Oh no, you found him, you fool, now deal with him." I sighed, and then after thinking about it a while, dug in the bag a final time. I found another length of rope. I tied it around my waist, right over the other rope that was holding the breeches up, in fact, making sure to leave a long tail. "Here, take this instead." He just stared at the end of the rope in my hand. "Here, you fucking mongrel." I grasped his free hand and packed the fraying end of the rope into it. Now he had me at two ends, and I was immediately wondering if I'd made it worse. "The rope, Risa. You hold on to just... God damn it, can you just..." I was prying at his fingers to get him to release me, but he was so fucking strong I might as well have tried to shove a tree up a blowfly's ass. "The rope, you shankered cow," I hissed, nearly yelled. I was annoyed enough to forget we were supposed to be escaping. "Let me go, you encephalitic... Oh, thank the high fucking nine." He seemed to have figured it out. He was holding onto the rope with both hands now. Finally, I pulled on the boots and tried a few paces. They were far too big and threatened to slip off my feet if I didn't flex my ankles in odd directions as I stepped. I found I had to point my toes up and lead with the heel. Had to impact the ground first with the heel before anything else to keep the damn things on, rather than walking as a sane man does, touching first with the toes and the ball of the foot. I ripped my old shirt into scraps and jammed the wads into the boots. When I put them back on, they were about as comfortable as a finger up the ass, but at least they weren't falling off anymore. I took Ambrosius by the lead and said, "Come on, we'll head east a while, deeper into the Yarnsburg. There's a village out that way, if I remember. It's not large, but there's no road leading out their way, so I doubt we'll see any recruiters there." I had a rope in my hand to lead my ass, and Risa had a rope in his hand to lead another. We headed east. I never saw that village again. Sometimes I catch myself hoping that maybe Nix moved into my old house before I remember. We should have reached the town after only 3 or 4 hours of travel, 6 at the most. But of course we didn't. There were no roads leading out to it, not really. I recalled a kind of dirt trail breaking off the main road between my village and Plattsdorf that delved into the Yarnsburg, and that if you followed it far enough into the forest, it would eventually lead you to a clearing. Within that clearing was cradled a little town, just as backcountried and crossbred as my own, populated by the kind of people who wished not to live close to a true road. Criminals and convicts, in other words, either released or escaped back into the world at large, who wanted no part of the world at large anymore, and so moved off to its extreme edge. As I had. As so many of us had. Knowing what I knew of the so-called justice of Teodiscus, my guess was that within that village lived the most honest people Erda had to offer. The people who lived there might wormhole your belly with a length of steel, but they would do it honestly. They would be upfront about it, right out in the open. No misunderstandings. They wouldn't sidle up to you like a friend to fuck you when your back was turned, nor would they recite a bunch of horseshit, invented laws as they locked iron around your wrists. You might get a simple glance, followed by a, "You don't belong here." And then you could either get the fuck out or stick around and see how that worked out for you. My kind of people, in other words. And I couldn't goddamn find them. I knew how to get to their village by way of the trail. Now we were coming in on them sidewise through the heart of Arnsberg, and I suppose that clearing wasn't exactly where I imagined it to be. We walked the whole day away trying to find it, and then when sundark came, we were obliged to set a camp in the bole of an old spiny-leafed oak and wait out the morning. If we'd had that damn trail, I think we would have pushed ahead, but an unmanaged forest in the dark is a treacherous thing, and Ambrosius could have easily turned a leg. I was arranging Deadfall within a ring of stones when I said, "If this keeps up, we'll be in the high country in no time, Risa."
High cunt.
No, no. That's rude. I smiled. It seemed a wonderful trick. I wondered what other words I could try on him that he might mispronounce as disastrously. It might be a fun little bit of mummery we could perform after he'd kicked the shit out of a town's strongest men, after all the bets were settled up. Country, Risa, country. I waved vaguely over my head. Up there. Risa tilted his head back to look while I dug through my sack for a bit of flint.
High country.
His voice was a thing you felt more than heard when he whispered like that. When Risa whispered, it was like the world was rolling over on you. It's more impressive if you head south, I said. Not many people live on the edges. Those as do it in small villages, or they live as hermits out in the middle of nowhere. They tend farms and live without need or want of any society. And for the most part, they like to retire to their beds when Zintgunt lights the night with her pale cheek. So when you look up at the high country at night around these parts, all you find is a lot of blackness. You'll see. When we get further south, we'll start passing under some real cities. Cities that run their fires all night. That look like a smattering of orange fairy fire dusted up Erda's spine. When I was a boy, I lived in Colmar. And sometimes, when Mathis had drunk so much that the only thing he could do was sleep it off, and the other apprentices and I were left alone, I could sneak out into the city and take to the rooftops. There was one I liked the best. It was flat and fairly high, being on a three-storied inn. I'd lay up on that roof and look at Quedlinburg, Colmar's sister city. And I used to dream about what all those firelights meant. I imagined there were parties happening up there, with people dancing and singing for hours and hours and hours, playing games, card games and bone throwing, and drinking the sweetest drinks you could imagine, where children lived safe with their mothers and fathers who were well-treated, who were not made to... A knot exploded in the fire, I think, or maybe Ambrosius snorted in his sleep, I don't remember. It made me lose whatever path my mind was following. Anyways, you'll see something like it once we start heading south.
South?
Yes, heading south. South means a lot of things. It means danger, sure. The danger of being picked up for the infantry. And don't you know they'd love to get their hands on such as you? But there is also money to the south. Yeah. South is where the money is. Now quiet down a while, Risa, while I see what we managed to bring. I swear to every fucking one of them, where is my thrice-damned fucking flint? I couldn't find it anywhere. I'd gone through the bag at least 3 times while we talked and found by touch everything I'd managed to bring. Found every bit of it but the flint. On the 4th search, I had to consider that maybe I just hadn't grabbed the fucking thing, which was marvelous. I think we don't get a fire tonight, guys, I said. That's my fault. I don't know what happened. I was sure I'd grabbed it. I'm sorry, guys. Sorry about that. Risa looked at me a few moments as if I was still talking. Then when he must have realized I wouldn't say any more, he rolled over on his side and pillowed his head with one enormous arm. Ambrosius was already loudly asleep. Well, okay. I woke up wedged between 2 stacks of meat. I had my donkey on one side with his spine jammed into my shoulder and his head rested on my thigh. On the other side was the mountainous slab of the giant's back towering up over me like a great earthen dike. There was a tremendous amount of heat coming from both of them, and it was quite nice, which was strange, because I had the vague wisp of a memory suggesting I'd been dreaming of sleeping in the gutter again, with the rain coming down and running over the cobbles, soaking into my rags and chilling the skin until I could feel it in my bones, as if I would be cold and sodden for the rest of my life, no matter how many fires I stood before or how many heavy blankets I might climb under. And that's an odd thing to do, I think. To be dreaming about freezing to death in a back alley when you wake up and find your body is getting all the warmth it needs and more besides. Dreams seldom make sense, though, I found. We saw the smoke from the cook fires on the following day. We'd only been walking a couple of hours that morning, moving slowly due to our exhaustion and our empty bellies, when I saw Ambrosius's ears perk up. He started ranging ahead, pulling against his lead with his head pumping up and down excitedly. Risa was still holding the end of my rope, and pretty soon I started to feel as though I was being pulled apart slowly. Being scarcely able to reason with him through speech, I found the giant unreasonable, and so had to speak with Ambrosius to get him to calm down. But then I smelled the fires, and later still I saw the clean white smoke creeping out above the treetops, and then shortly after, we were approaching the boundary of a town nestled in a clearing hidden far away from the machinations of gods or man. And so far as I could tell, the fucking army had already been by. We stayed out in the trees where they couldn't see us, and watched them a while. The first thing I noticed was that there were no men. Well, no, that's not entirely true. There were men out there that had one foot in the grave. Bent, gray-haired things with collapsing lips and mottled skin. They moved around on canes as often as not, and there was not many of them. I think I saw two or three of them going about their day. I even saw one of them, a man whose face had gone so soft with age I at first mistook him for a crone, crouched on arthritic knees working a small potato field. He went about his work laboriously, and I imagined that even hiding in the trees I could hear the sound of his bones grinding against each other. Aside from these relics, there were women of every size and shape, and a lot of lost-looking children. These children weren't hardly right at all. They just stood around, most of them grubby, some of them hanging on to their mother's skirts just as Risa held on to my fucking rope. "Risa, you'd better stay here in the trees."
"No go, Udo."
I resisted a firm desire to strangle him. "Risa, listen, and try your best to understand, okay? I can't take you into these towns we're going to. The cities, the villages and such. It isn't safe to take you into them. A place like that is easy to get stuck in, especially if the watch decides it doesn't want you to leave. They can form up on all the streets and bar your exit. They have jails in those places, and though you appear to be the strongest creature I've ever encountered, maybe stronger than a bear even, I don't believe you'd have such an easy time walking out of a jail, or even the stocks, if they decide to lock you up in them. Enough people can bring down a giant, Risa, and in the cities you can bet your ass they have enough people. Don't say anything, just let me get this out now. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, trying to figure out how we're going to make this work. About the only way I can figure is that we have to hold our contests out in the woods, or maybe in the open country, though that seems risky. The woods are a good place to work. You can escape through a forest. By hell, even one as large as you can so escape, especially given how fast you are. He seemed to get what I was saying, I think. It's damned hard to tell. And toward the end, when he spoke very well, I couldn't ask him if he'd understood my words back then, because he never could remember those early days. The giant peered through the leaves at the decimated town and seemed to want to say something. I said, "Risa, look here." I beckoned him to lean closer to me, and he did. "Someone needs to look after Ambrosius, too, you know." Risa looked at the donkey curiously. "Just look at the poor fucker, can't you? Somebody has to stay back to protect him. He's no good on his own. If we leave him here, he'll probably fall down a hill or something, or try to fuck something that doesn't want to be fucked. He's very much a romantic." He continued to look at the donkey. I could see his jaw working as he thought, whatever the fuck it was he was thinking. I held the lead out to him. "Come on, Risa. I need a partner here, not a child." I'll never know what that giant could or could not understand in those days, as I've said. But he took the lead from me and seemed to double in size. Not physically. He swelled, as if he took on some great burden, knew it, and so marshaled his powers to bear it. I stretched up high overhead to clap his shoulder. Now that's what a partner does. My boy. And then he smiled at me. And it was beautiful. You want to be careful walking into a strange town. The cities are different. In the cities, there are so many people that one or two more are easily overlooked. In a town or village, every new presence is felt whether they see you or not. The addition of a new body changes the air, and often they can feel it when they wake in the morning. They rise to the day and taste the difference in the air. They hear the sounds of the surroundings and know there are strangers. It's a feeling like a lowing sound out in the darkness, just beyond the light of the fire. A stranger passes by and leaves a taste in your mouth, like anise seed, and you feel it running up your spine, and you know. You know a stranger has come, and maybe you'd better keep an eye out. Better lock up your children and pen your animals. I stood on the end of their village out in the open a good long while so they could see me. I kept my hands in sight, and whenever one of the women looked at me, I would bow and then look away. It felt a strange thing to do. I was so used to people purposefully not noticing me. But these people didn't know that I was a digger. As far as they could tell, I was just a vagrant. They had no idea I was far more despicable than they suspected. A woman came out to meet me around the same time my feet began to ache from standing there. She was as stout as a beer barrel, with a hawk's nose, thick brown hair streaked in gray, and a large cudgel tucked under her arm. As I looked closer at the weapon, I could see a large shard of stone about as wide as my hand had been embedded into the bulbous end and wrapped in place with hide thongs. It looked like it could part my hair right down the middle, as well as my skull and my fucking brain within. She had arms like great sides of beef, and I figured she could probably make two of me if she swung hard enough. "You're a thief," she said. I bowed and said, "No, ma'am." "Them clothes aren't yours." "I swear to you they are. I got them in a small village where the selection wasn't that great, and they were all I could afford." She took the hem of my shirt between her fingers and rubbed it thoughtfully. "Couldn't afford much." She let it drop, sniffed, and stared at me. "No, ma'am, but it's not for lack of money," I said quickly. She'd given me a look like I was a scrap of garbage she was about to cast away. "I've been saving for a few necessities, you see. I need a cart, some new clothes, obviously, some provisions. I have a long trip ahead. Have you a wheel right here?" She was looking me up and down, probably trying to figure out where my purse was hidden. I was confused at first. I'd have to be insane to come strolling into a strange village like that alone with my purse dangling at my hip. What kind of idiot did she take me for? And then I realized she didn't take me for any kind of idiot at all. She just never had to do this before. She was probably the wife of their mayor, or chieftain, or whatever they had, and it was usually his job to come sound out the newcomers. Only he was gone now. Scooped up by one of Dittmar's commanders, or one of his lords. And now the job fell to her, and the poor girl was seeing to it the best way she knew how, but she didn't know how. Her husband had never told her how to do it, what to look for, what signs hinted at a sinister man. She was making it up as she went, in other words, and the whole village sitting there behind her like fat, ripe fruit, praying she didn't fuck up a task that had never in her life been hers. Or maybe not. Sometimes people are just clueless all on their own. "Beg your pardon, good wife. I have money, yet not on me. I think you'll find that to be the case often enough if you see more like me, which these days is more likely to happen. Men like me have been robbed before, not by people so obviously good and kind as yours, of course. But some towns, I've seen, have an easier time of turning out a stranger's pockets than others." Her eyes darted suspiciously, and I could tell that I was reciting her own thoughts back to her. Her cheeks flushed, making her severe face something less severe, and I thought I might have seen the young woman her husband once married. I smiled without showing a smile. Heavens knows how she might have interpreted a smile. Men like me will typically hide their money somewhere far off, just in case. But ma'am, I swear to you, I'll happily spend it here if you give me the chance. You folks can earn it from me honestly, and there won't be the hassle of hiding a body when it's all said and done. She stiffened and said, "That isn't our sort out this way. That's for high country chiselers, not us." "Well then, ma'am, you are of a better sort than most." She thought about that, and then nodded her agreement. "How are you called?"
"Udo, ma'am."
"This is Nella you're talking to now. I'm the law here, until my husband returns."
"He's your chief?"
"Aye."
"Thank you. May I know his name as well?"
"I'll speak his name again when he comes home."
I bowed my head respectfully at this. I understood. "Goodwife Nella, if you'll trust me to step away a while, I'll retrieve my purse and open it to you so you can see the value of my word." She looked me up and down then and said,
"Well, your tongue is finer than your appearance."
About 3 different responses to this came unbidden to my mind, none of them any good at all, and I kept my mouth shut.
"Go get your purse and come back. We won't watch where you go. If it's as you say, you'll be allowed in for the day. The wheelwright has gone away with the rest, but you can deal with his wife. There may yet be some of his wares for her to sell you. You shove off at sundark, though."
"Of course, ma'am, of course.
Nella is fair enough for my ear."
"Nella, then. Thank you."